So in Time magazine, when the Americans had to finally evacuate Vietnam, you know, Americans were involved in Vietnam for so many years. So when the Americans finally left Vietnam, after losing their battle because they were unable to fight the enemy, so an American soldier, not the general and not the major and not the captain, they picked an ordinary general issue soldier, an ordinary GI, not the GI Joe you see advertised on TV, but a regular GI, and they asked him that, what do you think is the reason why America lost the war against Vietnam? After all, the American soldier is physically better built. He's tall, he's strong, he's nourished at least 4 times better than the Vietnamese soldier. He's got weapons which are at least 10 to 15 times more effective than the Vietnamese soldier. They have more money, they have more guns, they have more airplanes. And everything you have is completely out of proportion to what the Vietnamese have. Plus, you all poured so many millions and millions and millions of dollars in buying up equipment and buying up the loyalty of people around there. How is it then that the most powerful nation in the world, after all, America is the most powerful nation in the world, and how did the most powerful nation in the world lose a battle, lose the war against perhaps what was eventually one of the most poor nations in the world? So the American soldier, he just gave one answer. He said, you are asking me a question, how the most powerful nation in the world lost the war against one of the smallest nations and one of the poorest nations in the world. And the answer I can tell you, sir, is that we lost the Vietnam War for one reason. He said, we never knew who was the enemy. He said, we used to go on patrol, and when we used to go on patrol in the villages, the children would come and we would give them sweets, the women would come and give us something to eat, the men in the fields would wave at us and come and talk to us, and we would roam for days and days and days without seeing a single enemy. Then suddenly, before we knew what had happened, there would be bullets all around. We never saw who fired those bullets, neither we saw the soldiers. Many of them were dead. A cycle would be driven by an old man and it would be left somewhere nearby where we were having our snacks, and that cycle would actually be carrying a basket with a bomb, and that bomb would explode. Sometimes a child would come and slip a hand grenade and run away, and we would never know. So he said the main problem was that we did not know who was the enemy. And because we did not know who was the enemy, we lost the war. Because after all, if you don't know who is the enemy, who are you going to shoot? That's why they had so many massacres, like the My Lai massacre, which took the headlines, where they simply lined up innocent villages and shot them. Because they didn't know who was the enemy, they were just picking innocent people and killing them. They were increasing the resentment of the population against the occupation army. So he said the main reason why we lost the war is that we didn't know who the enemy was. So today I am going to discuss your greatest enemy. Because, yes? Yes, most of the time the soldier on the front never saw the enemy at all. This is an interview with the soldier on the front. So, today I am going to talk about your enemy. Because unless you understand who is your enemy, you will never be able to win your battle. Now, the enemy that you have will be best described in a small story that I will relate to you. And this story is related from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is what is known as the Uddhava Gita. Just like you have the Bhagavad Gita, you have in the Srimad Bhagavatam one portion which is known as the Uddhava Gita. But just like Krishna is telling the message to Arjuna, here Krishna tells the message to Uddhava. So it's known as the Uddhava Gita. So in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna is relating to Uddhava different stories which help him to understand how one can be spiritually advanced. So in this story, Krishna relates to him that Krishna's ancestor, that is the ancestor of the Yadu dynasty, he was actually walking in his garden and he came across an avadhut. An avadhut means a renunciate who was not following any fixed order of life. So when he saw this avadhut, he called him and he said that, tell me dear sir, why you are moving around like an avadhut? Why? Because he explained to him that as an avadhut, you look actually very handsome, so you are physically attractive, you seem to come from a good family, You are very educated. You are also seeming to be very intelligent. But despite all these advantages, why have you simply renounced the world? And why have you actually come to this situation where you are simply roaming around the world like an avadhut? This is how this Uddhava Gita starts. And in this Uddhava Gita, he actually relates so many stories. Because this avadhut is telling him or explaining to him how he has learned different things from different gurus. What he has learned from the wind, what he has learned from the mountain, what he has learned from the earth, what he has learned from the eagle, what he has learned from the fish. So in this Uddhava Gita, while he is relating it, Krishna tells Uddhava the story of what is known as the story of the Avanti Brahmana. So this Avanti Brahmana was like this avadhut. He actually came from a wonderful family. He was belonging to a very aristocratic Brahminical family. He was very wealthy. His father was also very wealthy. And not only that, this Avanti Brahmana did very well in business. So when he did well in business, he had lots of money with him. Since he had lots of money, his family prospered. Other family grew. Naturally, when you have a lot of money, your family keeps on growing. More brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, joint family keeps on expanding. He had so many friends. Any number of friends came and they were well associated with him. So as long as his business was prospering, as long as he had a lot of money, as long as he had everything, he was very, very happy and very content. Then what happened was that this poor Avanti Brahmana, he lost all his money. Every single paisa that he had, he lost. So when he lost his money, first thing when he lost his money was that he lost his friends. All fair weather friends, all his friends left him. After his friends left him, all the different appendages of his joint family gradually left him. Finally, only his wife and children were there. His children also left him to seek their fortune elsewhere. And actually what happens? When you are not doing well in life, your mind is not controlled, you are irritable, you are suffering, automatically what happens is you make people around you suffer. So finally his wife also left him. So finally this Avanti Brahmana, he had nobody but himself. He lost his money, he lost his friends, he lost his relatives, he lost his son, he also lost his wife. So now he thought that maybe this is the plan of God. God has made this plan for me. That now I have lost everything that there is to possess. So let me do one thing now. Let me, since I have lost anything, everything anyway, by Krishna's mercy, let me take sannyas. So this Avanti Brahmana, he decided to take sannyas. So when he took sannyas, Krishna explains to Uddhava, you would have thought that his problems were actually solved. That his problems were all answered. But in fact, what happened was, that when he took sannyas, his problems actually multiplied. He became even more miserable, more unhappy and more tortured. So this is the story that he relates. When he would roam around with his danda and his bead bag and his sannyas robe, people used to make fun of him. They would say that, oh, this man, he had a lot of money. And when he had a lot of money, he never had much time for God. But now that he has lost all his money, he has lost all his family, he has lost all his friends and his wife and children, now he has thought of God. So since everything was snatched away from him, he has now given up everything. He had nothing to give up anyway because he had lost it. So they would make fun of him and mock him. When he would walk through the streets of the villages, the small children used to pelt stones at him. When he used to take a mound rock, that he would not utter a single word, they would come and beat him with sticks just to make him say something, so that his mound rock would be broken. When he was sitting down and eating by the bank of the river, children would come and they would spit or pass urine on his food or on his head. When he would lie down and go to sleep, the minute he would get up, he would find his sannyas danda was gone, his bead bag had been stolen. And in this way, he was tortured wherever he went. Whichever village he went to in that area, everybody knew about him, everybody tortured him, everybody insulted him, everyone abused him, they threw stones at him. They didn't leave him in peace. When he used to take Mohanrath, they used to beat him. So this Avanti Brahmana was in terrible distress, more distress than any of us can imagine. More distress than any of us have ever been in. That he gave up everything to serve God, and after giving up everything to serve God, he was in extreme distress. So Krishna relates to Uddhava that this Avanti Brahmana actually tolerated all this. This Avanti Brahmana tolerated all this without any disturbance. It's a very unique thing. There's nobody in this room who doesn't have problems. Or there's nobody in this room, if they don't have problems now, who will not have problems in the future? Everybody has problems. If not now, in the future or in the past, you've experienced problems. But the test of spiritual life is how you tolerate these problems. The test is how you take these problems, how you endure these problems, how you tolerate these problems, how you surrender to God who has sent the problem to you for your purification. So, he said that he tolerated the miseries of life by chanting a song, and that song is known as the song of the Avanti Brahmana. So Uddhava says that, let me also hear this song. Let me also hear this song of the Avanti Brahmana. Because if I hear this song, then at least I don't have as many problems as he does. But surely by chanting this song, I will also be able to tolerate my problems. So Krishna then relates to him the song that the Avanti Brahmana used to sing, and which by singing this song, he would be able to tolerate the miseries of his life. So he says, that Nayam Jano Me Sukha Dukha Hetur. He says, these people are not responsible for my suffering. The first line of the song is, Nayam Jano Me Sukha Dukha Hetur. We are always under the impression that somebody or the other is responsible for our problem. This is one key point that you should keep in mind. That when we are suffering, we always blame somebody for the suffering. Who do we blame? The government. The government is corrupt. The government that I have to deal with is corrupt. The government that taxes me is corrupt. These people are corrupt. Municipal corporation is corrupt. This one is corrupt. That one is corrupt. In my business, to do anything, I have to give money. Therefore, I am harassed. These people are always trying to bite my flesh. So first of all, you blame these people. Or you might blame other people. For example, a husband might blame his wife. If only I had married that other girl. I made the biggest mistake of my life by marrying this woman. I had one chance, and that chance slipped away from my fingers. Now I have married this woman, therefore I shall be miserable for the rest of my life. Woman may also think like this. I made the biggest mistake of my life by marrying this crazy man. And therefore, I have got nothing except to suffer what this man is going to inflict on me. Or the daughter-in-law may be thinking about the mother-in-law. Or the mother-in-law about the daughter-in-law. That everything will be wonderful. My husband and I are leading a wonderful life. Only this Kanta is in the picture. Once this Kanta is taken out, then everything in my life will settle down. Let me get my own flat. Let me move away from my husband's parents. Then everything in my life will settle down. So like this, people are always thinking. The son is thinking of his father and mother. Oh, my father and mother, they are so orthodox. They are harassing me. They are troubling me. If only I was not troubled by them, I would be very peaceful. Maybe if I move away from my parents and live separately, that will be a wonderful solution for all my problems. Then I'll have no problems at all. I'll have no parents hassling me, do this, do that, and giving me problems and troubles like that. Or the parents may think that, are you sure that this is my son? Are you sure this child wasn't exchanged in the nursing home when we came home? Because the way he is behaving, my blood pressure is going up. I know I'll get a stroke as a result of this child. So he is the main cause of my suffering. So in this way, we are always blaming somebody else for the suffering. Now here we have the Avanti Brahmana, who is actually seeing people for no reason at all. And what are these people doing? They're stealing his beat bag, they're beating him with sticks, they're pelting him with stones, they're passing urine on his food, they're spitting on his head. But in spite of all that, what does he say? He says, Nayam Jano Ye Me Sukha Dukha Hetu. He says, these people are not responsible for my suffering or my distress. He also says, Na Devata. He says, not even the demigods are responsible for my suffering. Sometimes people think that, acha, I made a mistake. Every year I used to have Ganpati in my house. We used to have Ganpati in my house every year. Now this year I attended some crazy class on Bhagavad Gita which says that if you worship Krishna, automatically all the demigods are worshipped. So I didn't bring Ganpati home this year. And now all miseries have come on my head. So if you don't satisfy Ganpati, Ganesh, then automatically what happens is all miseries are inflicted on your head. So you might think that that is the cause of your distress. Or some other demigod is troubling you. So you want to do something else, you want to worship Ganpati, or you want to do Chandika home, or you want to do this or that or whatever it is, because the demigods are responsible for your distress. But what does he say? He says, No Devata, Nayam Jano Me Sukha Dukha Hetur. These people are not responsible for distress. No Devata, not the demigods are responsible for my distress. No Devata Atma. Sometimes we feel this body is causing us distress. And what to do? We are in this terrible, perishable body. My joints are paining. My back is troubling me. I get out of breath, I've got high blood pressure, I'm suffering from diabetes, I have so many physical problems. It's all the problem is my body. If only something happened by which I could get a new body, or this body could be treated well, then automatically all my sufferings would just go away. But he says, no, not even the body. He says, Nayam Jano Me Sukha Dukha Hetur Na Devata Atma. Not these people, not the demigods, not the body. Griha. Sometimes people say that, stars are responsible for the unhappiness. The stars are responsible for unhappiness. Actually, my main problem is that I am going through my Shani Mahadasha and it's my Sade Sati also. That means I am going through Saturn period and I have got Sade Sati. That means 7.5 years of Saturn in that. So you can understand how gross is the effect of Saturn. And Saturn, everyone knows that when Saturn comes in Sade Sati in Shani Mahadasha, oh bapre, finished. And it's an afflicted Saturn with a Mars which is sitting in the same house. That means there's a conflict between Mars and Saturn. Then absolute, your life is in ruins and harassment and trouble and misfortune. So he says, no griha, not even the stars, karma. Then at least people try to console themselves. Nay, let me tolerate it. Because after all, it's my pichle janam ke karma which is troubling me. If I had not been a sinful man in my past life, or if I had not been performed sinful activities in this life, I would not be suffering like I am suffering today. Na griha karma kala. Then we said time. Actually, there is nobody who does not blame time. It is the effect of time or kala. In fact, Krishna says, time I am destroyer of all. So it is the effect of time which has aged my body. It is the effect of time which has deteriorated my human relationships. It is the effect of time which has destroyed my business and my partnership. It is the effect of time which is causing all problems. But he says that it's not even time. So he clearly mentions, Nayam jano me sukha dukha hetur na devata atma griha karma kal. So not the people, not the demigods, not your body, not the stars, not your past karma. And not also does he say that it is time that is responsible for your suffering. So then what is the cause of the suffering? He says, Mana param karanam amananti sansara chakram parivarta yedyat. He says it is my mind, and it's my mind alone that is the cause of all my suffering. None of these things are responsible for my suffering. I am blaming other people, but they are not responsible. I am blaming also the demigods, but they are not responsible. I am blaming the illnesses of my body, they are not responsible. I am blaming my stars, that's not responsible. I am also blaming my past karmas, that is not responsible. Neither is time responsible. The main cause of all my suffering is only my mind. It's my mind and my mind only which is causing all my problems. So as I was trying to tell you, first of all, understand your enemy. If you understand your enemy, you can tackle your enemy. If you don't know your enemy, throughout life you are roaming around like a madman, completely delirious, banging into things, banging into people, causing problems for yourself and others. But understand your main problem is your mind. In fact, Prahlad Maharaj is being tortured by his father Hiranyakashipu. So when Prahlad Maharaj is being tortured by Hiranyakashipu, the father is torturing the son, he throws him from a cliff. He has him attacked by tridents, he has him bitten by a poisonous snake, he feeds him poison. He has an elephant tread on him. He has Holika carry him into a fire so that the son will be burnt in the fire. He does all sorts of things. And what is the reason he does that? He says, my dear son, by glorifying Lord Vishnu, who is my greatest enemy, you are causing me great pain. That all this is because you are glorifying my enemy, that is Lord Vishnu. So what does Prahlad Maharaj tell him? He says, my dear father, understand only one thing. And what is that one thing? That there is no enemy in the world except your mind. This is a very, very important point. Because all of us, if you are asked, who is your enemy today? Just now as you are sitting here, who is your enemy? And at least 5-6 names will come to mind. But the answer is not those 5-6 people. Your enemy today is none of these people, none of these things. Your enemy is your mind. This is the word of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the word of Prahlad Maharaj. And what does Prahlad Maharaj say? He says very clearly, he says very distinctly that you have no enemy in this world except your mind. It's your mind that is your own enemy. You have no enemy except your mind. And what kind of enemy is this? It's a terrible enemy, because it's an enemy that never ever leaves you. I remember as a child I used to read stories of Sindbad the sailor. So Sindbad the sailor was a very adventurous sailor who used to travel all around the world in his ship. And one day Sindbad the sailor was marooned on a desert island. So when he was marooned on a desert island, while he was walking on the beach, he came across a very ugly looking misshapen dwarf who was sitting on the ground, old man. And he said that I am very crippled and I am stranded here on this beach. My dear Sindbad, do me this one favor. Please carry me on your back or on your shoulders until we reach to some place where I can be put down more comfortably. So Sinbad, out of pity, compassion for this old man who is misshapen, who is a dwarf and very old, he carries that dwarf and he puts him on his shoulder. Once he puts him on his shoulder, he realizes that this man is the old man of the sea and this demon will never leave him. After that, Sinbad becomes the slave of this old man of the sea. Because this man, he sits on his shoulder, he tightens his legs around his neck and chokes him if he wants to go somewhere and doesn't listen to him. He pulls his hair, he bites his ear, he covers his eyes, and he makes life for him completely miserable until and unless Sinbad does exactly what the old man of the sea wants him to do. So Sinbad's life is made completely miserable because nothing he wants to do can be done. This old man, he chokes him by tightening his legs around his neck, he pulls his hair, he bites his ears, he claws his eyes, until Sinbad does exactly what that old man wants him to do. Who is that old man, my friend? That old man of the sea is your mind, and you are Sinbad the sailor. You are a victim of your mind. First of all, you don't know that he is your enemy. Secondly, you don't realize that so many things your mind is forcing you to do, which actually you know against your better judgment, would certainly be the cause of increased distress. So many times you have wished that, I wish I had kept quiet. I wish I had not said anything. Why did I respond? Why did I say this? Why did I do that? Because you are not under control. It's your mind that is controlling you, your mind that is dragging you, your mind that is forcing you. In fact, the mind is such a deadly thing that we always convince ourselves that we are not the body. Even after we do Bhagavad Gita course, even after so many years of initiation, we think that, I have understood that I am not the mind, I am not the body. But when you understand you are not the body, you immediately start thinking I am the mind. You lose your identification with your gross body, but immediately the next identification is you identify with your mind. And when you identify with your mind, to shake loose that identification from the mind is even more difficult than to shake loose that identification from the body. Because that mind is actually the most difficult thing to get rid of. In fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a wonderful story. And in that story, which is a story of King Puranjana is forced to leave his body, which is actually symbolically described as a city with 9 gates. That means he leaves the city with 9 gates, because a city with 9 gates gets on fire. In high fever, Puranjana leaves his body. So when he leaves the city with 9 gates, what happens? The superintendent of that city forces him to enter into another city. Now who is the superintendent of that city? The superintendent of the city is the mind. So also what happens? Sometimes people ask that, we leave this body, we change bodies. But why do we keep on changing bodies? We keep on changing bodies because we have not learned how to tackle the mind. The mind is the cause of reincarnation. The mind is the cause of making you take rebirth. And unless you understand what your mind is doing, unless you learn to spiritualize your mind, unless you learn to dissolve your mind, that mind will be the main cause of your rebirth. This is a very, very important point. And this mind, it consists, as our friend here asked, what is the subconscious mind? The answer is that the mind itself has got two portions. One portion of the mind is called the conscious mind, and one portion of the mind is called the subconscious mind. And it is true that to some extent your conscious mind can be controlled, but your subconscious mind, that is most difficult to control because you cannot understand it nor can you see it. If some conscious thought comes in your mind that I should do this or I should do that, it's easy to control. Okay, I won't have that cigarette, or I won't have that glass of whiskey, or I won't look at that pretty girl because my wife is with me, or whatever it is. But the point is that you don't know what your subconscious mind is forcing you to do. In fact, there was a very famous story about the Titanic. The Titanic was the first ocean liner built on that scale. And when the ocean liner, the Titanic, was launched, it was said you can never sink the Titanic because it was so beautifully built, it was made of steel. It was a huge ocean liner and people would go for luxury cruises on that. But that unsinkable ship, the Titanic, which nobody thought would ever sink, it sank. And how did it sink? It sank because it ran into an iceberg. Now what is the characteristic of an iceberg? An iceberg has got only 1/10 above the surface of water. 9/10 of the iceberg is below the water. So when they were traveling in the Titanic, they saw the iceberg. And when they saw the iceberg, they didn't think much of it, only so much ice above the surface. But 9/10 of that mass was below the surface. And that 9/10 that was below the surface, it simply ripped open the entire ship. And ripping open the entire ship, that unsinkable ship, the Titanic, sank and went to the bottom of the sea. So also, the subconscious mind is more deadly than the conscious mind. And it is a subconscious mind which has been responsible for the sinking of so many notable ships on the spiritual sea. On this ocean of material life, so many ships have been launched, so many people have taken to spiritual life. And each of them thought that, I am unsinkable. I will never sink. I am the unsinkable ship in this material ocean. I am starting my spiritual life and I shall never sink. But they have all sunk. And why have they sunk? They have sunk because they have neglected, ignored, forgotten about their subconscious mind. And that subconscious mind has existed beneath the surface, beyond the capacity of these people to see or understand. And the last moment before they realize, they may have become big sannyasis, some of them may have even been posing as gurus. But that point has come at time when that subconscious mind has actually ripped open their ship and they have sunk right to the bottom because they have neglected it. And don't think that, oh, if I neglect or ignore the subconscious mind, it will never come up again. It will come up. You might have heard the story of Bluebeard. Bluebeard was a Frenchman who murdered innumerable wives. Every time he would marry a new wife, he would enjoy her money, get rid of her and kill her. And as the story goes, he used to kill these women, and what would he do? He would lock them in a closet. In one small room, he would take the dead body and hang the dead body in that closet. He would preserve the body and hang it in that closet. And how was he caught? How he was caught was that his last wife actually opened that door and she found the remnants of her previous predecessors. She found the remnants of the previous wife. And that is how he was caught. Now, my dear friends, we are all Bluebeards. We all have our own skeletons in our cupboard. We all have our skeleton in the closet. We may have forgotten, but they are remaining. And it's simply waiting for somebody to open that door. And by the simple process of opening that door, those skeletons will come clattering and clashing outside. And all these skeletons will actually come forth and actually expose us and cause us to sink and to drown. So this is the most dangerous part of the mind. That it has got a conscious component, it has got a subconscious component. The conscious component you may think you are controlling, but the subconscious component is one which will actually drag you further and further. Before you are knowing what's happening, it will cause you to sink and drown. Actually, there's a wonderful book called Yoga Vashishth. And in the Yoga Vashishth, there is a famous story of a king by the name of King Sikidwaja. So King Sikidwaja, he was a very wonderful rich king and he had a great kingdom. And Sikidwaja was married to a woman who was also a princess. And his queen was the queen by the name of Sudalai. Now Sikidwaja lived and ruled the kingdom very wonderfully. But his wife, Queen Sudalai, she was actually a very accomplished yogin. She was very much spiritually realized and she had many yogic siddhis or power. Already discussed with you what the yogic siddhis and powers are. That you can make yourself lighter than air. You can have prapti siddhi, you can acquire things. You can make yourself very small, you can make yourself very huge. So there are many yogic siddhis. And this Queen Sudalai had actually mastered this yogic siddhi. She was a very spiritually evolved person. Now of course the husband never realized how spiritually evolved his wife was. This is a fact. Because you will see that husbands rarely realize how spiritually evolved their wives are. They always think that I am more spiritually evolved. So also King Sikidwaja, he thought that what will my wife teach me? So he never bothered or tried to understand anything about spiritual life from his wife. But one day a time came when King Sikidwaja was so tortured, so disturbed, that he decided that my solution is that since I am so disturbed, so unhappy, so disturbed and in great anxiety and distress, what I should do is that I shall leave my kingdom and I shall go away. So he came and told his wife that, my dear wife, I can't take it anymore. My troubles are too many. And because these troubles have actually come and they're choking my neck, I feel that by staying over here, my troubles will choke me to death. Better I should leave this place and go away. So his wife tried to explain to him, my dear husband, don't go away. You don't have to leave this place. But the husband, without telling his wife, one fine day, he left his throne, he left his kingdom, he left his wife, he left his courtiers, he left his kingdom and his subjects, and he walked away into the forest. So what did King Suddhodaya do? She was actually quite an evolved person. So she looked after the kingdom. And through her mystic yogic power, she found out where her husband was. And after giving him some time of a year, she decided to visit him. Through her yogic power, she assumed the body of a male saint and appeared just before her husband. And she said, oh, King Sikidwaja, how are you? So King Sikidwaja had given up everything. What was he wearing? He was wearing the bark from a tree. And he was living in a hut made of dried grass. And living in a hut made of dried grass with bark from a tree, when she approached him and she asked him, in the form of a male saint, said, how are you? He said, I have left my kingdom, I have left my wife, I have left my courtiers, I have left everything. Because I was having great distress. And now I have found that I am actually as miserable, if not more miserable than when I started. So she actually explains to him. She says, my name is Kumbha Muni. Kumbha means water pot. Because as a Muni, she was carrying a water pot in her hand. She says, I am known as Kumbha Muni. And I must give you this piece of advice that nobody can take to spiritual life and make spiritual progress on his own. Everyone has to accept a spiritual master. Unless you take the guidance of a more spiritually evolved person, you cannot make any progress in spiritual life. So my dear King Sikidwaja, you understand this fact that you have been rotting for 1 year for one simple reason. And that reason is that you have tried to enter spiritual life yourself without any guidance. Actually, I have done this before on the last day of the course. That spiritual life is shurasya dhara. It's like the edge of a razor. If you use it without guidance, you can cut yourself more easily than you can actually benefit from it. So, King Sikidwaja, he sees Kumbha Muni. And when he sees Kumbha Muni, he sees that the feet of Kumbha Muni are not on the ground. Because by the yogic power of levitation, Kumbha Muni is actually 6 inches above the ground. So immediately he falls flat at the feet of Kumbha Muni, who is actually none other than his wife. And he tells his wife, now who is in the form of Kumbha Muni, that my dear sage, you be my teacher, you guide me what I should do. Tell me what is the cause of my problem. And if you tell me what is the cause of my problem, I will be benefited because I accept you as my teacher. So his wife, that is Kumbha Muni, now tells him. She says, I will tell you 2 stories. And the first story she tells him is the story of a man who wanted a chintamani. You know what is chintamani? Chintamani is a touchstone which gives you wish fulfillment. If you touch it, it will fulfill all your wishes. You just hold it in your hand and ask for something, it will come before you. So this man was a rich man and he wanted this chintamani. But he didn't know where to look for it. Actually, the chintamani was lying on his own dressing table. Among all the jewels that he had, one of the jewels was the chintamani jewel. But he thought that the chintamani jewel cannot be here. Therefore, he abandoned his home and he went around looking for it. And finally, he went, landed up in the rubbish heap. And in the rubbish heap, he started looking for the chintamani among pieces of broken cut glass. All broken glass, he was looking for chintamani. And actually, he hurt and damaged himself more than he actually would have if he had stayed at home. And the chintamani was there at home, right on his dressing table. The second story he told him is the story of the elephant. He says that this elephant was tied with chains and was trapped by the mahout. The mahout was sitting on the head of that elephant and that elephant was completely tied with chains. Now what did this elephant do? Using the 2 tusks of the elephant, it broke the chains. It tossed the mahout from the head and it ran away. But this mahout, he waited for his chance and he prepared a pit covered by dry grass. And that elephant came and he fell again in the pit. So now she explains to her husband that my dear husband, both these stories are applicable to you. Because first of all, you are the man who is looking for Chintamani, you are looking for your wish fulfillment, for happiness. And in looking for this happiness, you have not realized that the source of this happiness is lying there, in your own home, wherever you were, in your own position in life. Because who put you in that position in life? God has put you in that position in life. Actually, not one blade of grass moves without God's consent. Therefore, any of you here, if you are unsatisfied, dissatisfied with your position, remember this thing, that you would not be in that position if God did not want it to be so. So the very fact that God has put you in that position in life means that that position in life is perfect for you. So she explained to her husband, that position in life was perfect for you. That Chintamani was lying before you. But you have actually come to the forest. You have cut yourself on broken pieces of glass by performing all kinds of austerities. And through the performance of unnecessary austerities, you have actually hurt yourself more than you would have benefited. So King Sikhidoja says, what about the elephant? He says, you are that elephant. And you have been bound. What have you been bound by? You have been bound by your desire. Actually, iron chain can become rusty. And when it becomes rusty, it will break. But the chains of desires, they never rust. And they become stronger. And they actually multiply. So that you are tied and you are entangled much more than before. But she said, you broke all those chains. How did you break those chains? You broke those chains by using your two tusks. What are the two tusks? Vivek and Vairagya. Vivek means by discrimination, and Vairagya means by renunciation. By the two tusks of discrimination and renunciation, you have broken these chains. And by breaking these chains, you have actually run away. But unfortunately, the Mahout, that is your mind, has actually not been destroyed. So he laid a trap for you, and before you knew what is happening, you are once again trapped. Then she tells him, that, have you understood the story? He says, yeah, I understood the story, but now I don't know what I should do. What more can I do? He says, I have already renounced the whole world. I have renounced my kingdom. I have renounced my wife. I have renounced my children. I have renounced my wealth. I have renounced my position in life. Now what else do I have left? So she says, my dear King Sikhidwaja, you are not yet renounced. He says, you mean I am still not renounced? He said, yes, you are still not renounced. So he immediately goes. He takes off that bark which was covering his body. He puts that along with a hut made of dried grass and he sets fire to it. So he burns up everything. So he says, now I have got nothing. No clothes, no hut, nothing. Now that I have got absolutely nothing, now I am renounced. So Kumbh Muni tells him, my dear King Sikhidwaja, you are still not renounced. So he says, what else I have to renounce? I am completely naked, I have no shelter, I have no hut, I have got no clothes. Now what do I have left to renounce? So he decided, maybe you feel that I am in such a wonderful forest with such greenery and such wonderful scenery around me, so better I go to a desert. So with Kumbh Muni, he goes to a desert. And he says that now I am in a place where there is absolutely no greenery, no habitation, nothing. So now at least you should understand that I am renounced. So he says, my dear King Sikhidwaja, you are still not renounced. So King Sikhidwaja looks at his teacher, that is Kumbh Muni, and says, I have given up a kingdom, I have given up the queen, I have also given up my children, my courtiers, my treasury, my subjects, my position as a king, and I came to the forest. This man tells me I am not renounced. Therefore I have burnt the bark which was covering me, I have set the hut on fire, and he still tells me I am not renounced. So I left the surroundings of the forest where there was greenery and grass and trees and fruit, and now I have come to a desert, and this man is looking at me and telling me that I am still not renounced. What is left? Maybe my body is left. But since my body is the only thing that I have not renounced, let me now cast off this body. So King Sikhidwaja, he climbs up to the top of a high cliff and tells Kumbh Muni that now, my dear spiritual master, now I am going to be completely renounced because I am discarding this body. So Kumbh Muni looks at him and says, my dear King Sikhidwaja, even if you should jump from this cliff, you will still not be renounced. So what? You mean if I even jump from this cliff and I destroy this body that I have got, even then I will not be renounced? So what is it that I have left to renounce? I can't think of anything. So Kumbh Muni tells him, what you have not renounced is that, not your body, But that which agitates your body, just like the wind agitates the leaves in the tree, there is something that you cannot see which is agitating this body, which is the cause of movement of this body. And what is that? He says, that, my dear King Sikhiloja, is your mind. And as long as your mind is with you, you are not renounced. You may renounce your kingdom, you may renounce your wife, your children, your courtiers, your treasury, your subjects, your position. You may renounce your clothes, your hut, you may want to commit suicide and give up your body. But until you have renounced your mind, you will not be considered to be renounced. So he says, what is this mind that you are talking about? What is this mind that you are asking me to renounce? He says, this mind is that which you cannot see. It is that which agitates your body just like the wind agitates the leaves and branches, something that you cannot see. It is subtle. It is subtle because it is something that is beyond your vision. Your mind is nothing but ignorance. Mind is another name for ignorance. Because where there is no ignorance, there is no mind. The minute you get rid of all your ignorance, automatically what happens is that you simultaneously lose your mind. Your mind is another name for ignorance. Your mind is another name for your subconscious. Your subconscious is your mind. And what comes from that subconscious is what you actually experience as your present thoughts. Your desires, your unfulfilled desires, your vasanas, your bundle of unfulfilled desires or your vasanas, that is known as mind. Try to understand the mind, dear King Sikhiloja, because the roots of that mind are actually none other than your false ego. The stem is your intelligence. The upper part of the tree is none other than your intelligence. And the leaves and branches, they are actually your sankalpa vikalpa. What you are accepting, what you are rejecting, that is that part of your mind. So the mind, it is called ahankar when it arrogates, when it says it is I, me and mine. That mind is called ego. That same mind, when it discriminates, it is called intelligence. When it actually remembers, it is called chitta. This same mind, when it accepts and rejects, that time it is called the actual mind which accepts and rejects. So it is this that you have to destroy. And unless you learn to destroy this part of your mind, you will never ever be renounced. So he says, how can I destroy this mind? So he tells you, Kumbh Muni tells him, that the way to destroy your mind, my dear King Sikhiloja, is that you have to understand that your mind is your material mind. You are not this body, you are a spiritual person. And therefore, along with your spiritual personality, you have a spiritual mind. And you also simultaneously have what is known as a material mind. Now, since you have a spiritual mind and you have a material mind, the way to actually free yourself of your problems is to spiritualize your material mind. That is to disintegrate your material mind until only the spiritual mind remains. So he says, how do I differentiate which is spiritual mind and which is material mind? So he explains to him, what is the difference between spiritual mind and material mind? The spiritual mind is attracted, nourished and made happy and content by serving the Lord. Whenever you perform devotional service, of course the most important process is chanting the holy name of the Lord. But any of the other processes, that is Shravanam, by hearing as you are doing now, Kirtanam, talking about the Lord, Smaranam, remembering the Lord, Archanam, that is worshipping the deity of the Lord, Vandanam, that is offering prayers to the Lord, Pad Sevanam, that is worshipping at the feet of the Lord or the spiritual master, Dasyam Sakhyam Atman Nivedanam, working as a servant of the Lord, working as a friend of the Lord and surrendering everything to the Lord. All these activities nourish that spiritual mind. That spiritual mind is absolutely 100% stable. It never has fluctuations of highs and lows. Spiritual mind not at one time feels ecstatic and one time feels depressed. The spiritual mind is constant in its mood. And that mood is simply peace, silence and bliss. The spiritual mind never wants to control, because it feels that the spiritual mind understands that God is the controller. The spiritual mind never wants to enjoy, because the spiritual mind understands that God is the enjoyer. The spiritual mind never considers itself superior to anybody else, because it understands that all is